welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Thursday late morning, and I am joined in New York City. He's actually at home for a change, Tim Bonteps.
I am at home. And before we start, guys, Zora Stevenson, who does great job on Bucks TV, and Mike Walczewski, the legendary Knicks PA announcer, both came up to me unprompted at the Bucks-Knicks game yesterday and said how much they enjoy the pod and they always listen. Wanted me to relay that message to you guys.
Three-point goal, Carmelo Anthony. That's a terrible impression, but
he is the best. That was super cool. He came up and was like, pod's awesome. You guys are great. I listen every time. He even said, I'm happy it's not three times a week. The people want more Windhorst.
Yeah, you know, so what you're really learning here is that if you see Bonteps in an arena, just come up and tell him you enjoy the pod, and he'll name check you at the start. It's going to be great.
Hey,
joining us from his new wing on his palatial estate in Dallas, Texas, is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
For those of you who watch us on our YouTube channel or might catch Howdy Partners, the McMahon.
The hit YouTube show that comes out Tuesday evenings.
And don't forget the hit part.
It is a spinoff.
While there's been construction at the McMahon estate, we've been subjected to a blank wall. But now McMahon in a palatial office with gorgeous, would you call that Hunter Green cabinetry?
Around these parts, we call it Mean Green.
You should probably tell the people why. Yeah, I don't think most people know what North Texas's deal is, pal.
Well, if they don't know, that's on them. It ain't my job to educate. It's my job to entertain, damn it.
It's a good thing it's not your job to educate. You're in trouble. It does look great, though.
Watch this move. Speaking of the green. Huh?
Oh, segue.
Wow. Wow.
How about those Boston Celtics?
How about them? We are rocking and rolling today. This is going to be a legendary pod, I think.
So this morning, Thursday morning, the Celtics, Woj reporting that the Celtics have signed Al Horford to a 2-year contract extension. Al Horford, who I was questioning his contract like 6 years ago about whether he was a max player. Al Horford's going to get checks till he's 40 now. 2-year, $20 million extension. And it's who knows when they actually came to the agreement.
Old pal Chris Forsberg last night or this morning was tweeting that last night after they beat the Heat, Mike Zarin, the assistant GM of the Celtics, he's on second command under Brad Stevens, was parading Al Horford around the locker room. So it seemed like this might have come to fruition yesterday or last night.
By the way, speaking of the Celtics, Eddie Palladino, PA announcer of the Celtics, another big fan, and also an iconic voice. And I won't impersonate him.
I was going to say, don't botch your impersonation to him.
Yeah, please don't do that. Please don't
I won't do
that.
I won't do it.
I would do my impersonation.
Rajon Rondo.
See, and then you did it.
And all these people are just going to stop listening. Sean Heath, the Mavs PA guy, but I need to chug like 8 Red Bulls first. Probably with vodka.
Oh, man. You might want to take that back. Okay. Celtics moved to 18-4, put up another 130 on the Miami Heat on Wednesday night and signed Horford to an extension. Horford, that trade was really, would you say, Bonteps, that was the first big move that Brad Stevens made when he came to
over
as president?
I would say it was because it literally was the first move you made as president.
Okay. I don't remember the timeline.
He got hired. He moved over to that job right after they lost the beginning of June. And 2 weeks later, they made the trade to get Al Horford in exchange for Kemba Walker, gave up a first round pick. Middle of the first round to get off Kemba's money to bring Horford back. And is a huge part of why they made the finals last year. He's been awesome again this year. He's shooting 48% from three, 55 from the field. And you know, the initial reaction, you see that contract, right? 2 years, $20 million. This year, Al's making $27 million. So that's a, you know, you're talking a two-thirds pay cut, basically. So you look at it and you say, well, why would Al Horford do that? Why, you know, to go back to the summer, why would he do that? couple reasons, right? So Al Horford, after the disastrous 2018-19 season when Kyrie was with the Celtics, season went completely off the rails, team blows up. Al Horford gets a huge deal, goes to play for the Sixers, leaves at free agency, has a disastrous season there, gets shipped out in Daryl Morey's first move, basically after taking over to Oklahoma City, to purgatory for a year. One season in his career, he misses the playoffs.
Well, to purgatory for half a year, then the second half of the year, you got to go chill on a beach.
That's right. Then he went and sat at home as they didn't have him play.
I think he actually stayed with the team, for the record.
Okay.
Well, either
don't,
way,
don't either screw way. My jokes up with facts. Go on.
Either way,
I don't need a what's the area code for Oklahoma City? 405. I don't need 405. Any 405 phone calls. Yeah, I don't need any 405.
The only 405 phone calls I get are from the Pink Parrot, so it's okay.
I'll probably get one now anyway. But he gets traded back to the Celtics.
Those are restricted.
That's right. From the moment he got back to Boston last year, he has had a permanent smile on his face. He's been so happy to be back with the Celtics. He's got great relationships with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart. He was with all those guys at the beginning of their careers. Helped turn that Celtics team into the team that went to a couple of conference finals before he left, and has been a seamless fit with this team now the past couple of years. Helped them get to the finals last year, was a huge part of that run. Has really helped anchor them this year with Robert Williams out. He's now practicing 5-on-5. He should be back soon. And to me, like, look, maybe Al Horford could have got $13, $14, $15 million a year as a free agent next summer, right? Mitchell Robinson got around 15. Wendell Carter got around 15. It's kind of like average starter money for a center now. So maybe he could have got a few million dollars more somewhere else. But this very clearly to me was Al Horford saying, I want to be on this Celtics team. I want to be part of this group. He really wants to win a championship. It's the one thing in his career he hasn't done. Last year was the first, he finally got to the finals for the first time. And, you know, this is him saying, I can lock in at this number, stay with the Celtics for the rest of my career. They obviously love having him back. And now you look at the Celtics, Jaylen Brown could potentially get an extension this summer. Grant Williams is up as a restricted free agent this summer. Their top seven or eight guys, other than that, are all signed under contract for the next several years. They have this group locked in going forward, and they're already the best team in the league with an incredible offense and with Robert Williams on the way back. So I think this is a really good day if you're a Celtics fan to get Al Horford locked up. And I think it makes a lot of sense for everybody that he chose to do so.
I don't think there's any question it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I mean, and you talk about the money. He took a little bit of a discount, but by the end of this contract, he's going to have made about $290 million.
That's right.
In his NBA career. So him prioritizing happiness and a chance to win a championship certainly makes sense.
No question.
So one of the reasons that the Thunder shut Horford down a couple of years ago with a press release, the reason I think it got more attention than anything was because the Thunder put out a press release saying Al Horford and the team agree we're going to shut him down. That's not something that normally happens because there was worries about his health, particularly his knee. He's been protecting his knee, among other things. Earlier in his career, he had some pectoral muscle issues. I think he tore both pecs or the same pec twice or something. But he's been protecting his knee for several years now, and he's healthy. He's averaging 31 minutes a game.
Well, and the Celtics also have been smart and have held him out of one half of every back-to-back so far this year.
And will forever.
For sure. It,
you know, probably. So he's probably played his last back-to-back.
Which he should.
Yeah, but it's working. He's feeling good. He's shooting the ball great. And they've got his minutes up to 31 and change. That's the highest it's been in 5 years. He hasn't
played
as many minutes in 5 years.
Once Robert Williams comes back, that will inevitably come down, as it should too, for the rest of the regular season until they get to the playoffs, and then they have to ramp him back up again.
Right. So really what this is they're extending his contract to make sure he's with the team next year. And 2 years from now, at age 39, who knows where he's going to be, and maybe he's used as part of a trade. he actually, probably recognizes that you take a deal like this, you open yourself up to maybe being traded. But at that point, you know, it may be near the end, but, you know,
maybe, maybe. I don't think so, though, honestly. Like Brad Stevens,
your front office in Boston. It's not Danny Ainge.
Well, it's not only that, but Al Horford might be Brad Stevens' favorite player ever. Like, from the moment he signed with the Celtics, like, he's everything about what Brad Stevens values. And it's not a coincidence that he was the first guy Brad went and got when the fact he went and made that trade. I think it says a lot about the things that Brad values. And I would be very surprised, again, like barring some kind of injury, but I think he'll be there and playing. And look, the other thing too, is you guys have both been around Al a long time. Like I have, he is in unbelievable shape. Like I know his knee is a little wonky, as a lot of guys that are, but like
he's dropped weight in his last few years. I would guess he's a little bit lighter than he was when he was with the Hawks.
Yeah, for sure. And now, like, he's a guy, like, if I was going to bet on a guy to be able to be, you know, sort of like Tim Duncan, right? Like, even as he got into the later part of his career, he was so smart. He knew how to work angles on the court. Like, I think you can, I'm not sure Al's going to be quite as good as he is this year in 2 years, but I still think he'll be a solid rotation level player, which is, at $10 million a year is
exactly
more than good enough.
Well, the thing is, so, you know, they have some medium term contract uncertainty on their roster, but most of their roster is locked down and this settles anything there. And, the Horford last year in the playoffs had a couple of absolutely brilliant games, and he had some games where he expended all of his energy on the defensive end and didn't have much to give offensively. If he's your fifth or sixth best player, which he frankly is on this roster, when they're fully healthy, maybe even their seventh best player, it's a good guy to have.
It's reminded me a lot of the way the Spurs came back in 2013-14 after they lost to the Heat. Now, obviously, that was a much more dramatic ending. That was a team that had won championships before, that had been to the top before, that kind of knew what it took to get there. But it's been interesting, even amid all the stuff with Ime, everything that's gone on, that's been the consistent message from those guys over and over and over again. We do not want to feel like that again. And they have played like it from day one. And they have been an absolute juggernaut. And that's with Robert Williams not out there. Like, they've had a middling defense. And once they get arguably the best defensive player in the league back, or one of them, they're probably going to be back to being a top five defense again, to go with an offense that's like 4.5 points better than everybody in the league.
Offense that's crazy. The best in NBA history. They're averaging 121.5 points per 100 possessions. It is historically dominant offense. And like you said, getting Robert Williams back, Marcus Smart was Defensive Player of the Year. I think what we've seen so far this season tells us that he was actually not the best defensive player on his own team. The Celtics right now rank 20th in defense. But one of the great things about Al Horford is he can play the five when you don't have Robert Williams. When you do have Robert Williams, those two guys can play together. And when those two guys are on the floor together, you cannot score. 99.9 was the defensive rating with those two guys on the floor together last year. And then Horford at the four, you know, he's not a great three-point shooter, but you have to guard him. You know, he spaces the floor. He's good enough to where you have to guard. And then he's such a good distributor. He just knows how to play off of everybody else. And so, you know, to get him at $10 million a year going forward, and like you said, it's not like his game is based on prime Sean Kemp type of athleticism. I think he's going to age well. If he ages well and he's a 20-minute per game player, that's still a bargain at that price.
And by the way, just to highlight how good Boston's offense is, they have, as Tim said, 121.5 offensive rating so far this season. Phoenix is second, 116.5. It's a 5-point gap to second place. That is the same gap from Phoenix in second place to the Sixers in 16th place in terms of offensive rating.
It's a secretariat race at this point.
It really is. It's insane.
Let me tell you. So last year, Jason Tatum had the best year of his career and made all NBA, which is why he got a Supermax extension. And or he qualified.
No, he didn't make the Supermax because the year before he just missed
cut.
He
did. Okay, I had it crossed my head. Anyway, he did make All NBA last year. He had an All NBA season last year.
All NBA first
year
team.
Before it was All NBA first team, and it was controversial that he missed All NBA. Sorry, I crossed my wires ahead. Anyway, my point is last November. All right, Jason Tatum shot 39% from the field in November and averaged 23 points. If you combine his October and November from last year, he averaged about 24 and a half points a game and shot 39%. His numbers now, 49% from the field and almost 32 points a game. So he's averaging about 10% better shooting and about 10 more points a game, give or take. A little bit.
Well, and also coming
off of a season where he was first team All NBA.
Well, I just went and looked up the date of it because I wrote a story last year about how unlucky Tatum was shooting jumpers, and he was 7 points lower than what his effective field goal percentage was supposed to be at the time I wrote it. Day I wrote that story was January 22nd last year after they lost at home to the Blazers. That put him one game below 500, and that was literally the game before he went to Washington, scored like 52 points. They won by 40 against the Wizards, and then they went on to win like 98% of their games the rest of the season.
Okay, this is bull crap. Bontemps is trying to take credit for Jason
Tatum's
success.
Let me just point out,
the Celtics really took off when you left town.
No, that's not.
Just for the record, the reason the Celtics are this juggernaut is because they shipped your ass off to New York. Well, what's
that's
happening
right.
in New York? The Knicks are as mediocre as could be, and the Nets are a complete circus fire.
I mean,
because you're there. Okay. Boston basketball is back because they got rid of Bontemps.
I mean, listen, my point is only that it's not that long ago that people, to your point, Brian, were saying, what's going on with Tatum? Why can't he make a jump shot? And like, it's crazy how much things have shifted the other way. Where now there's like six guys on the Celtics shooting over 45% from three this year, and they're just lighting up everybody every night.
Listen to these league ranks, okay? Number one in the league in field goal percentage as a team, okay? They're shooting 50% as a team. I mean, that's not going to last. If it does, it's unbelievable. They are shooting 49.8% as a team. That's incredible, averaging 50%. Number one in the league in three-point percentage at 41%. Number two in the league in two-point percentage. So good luck. Getting them to take a bad shot. And by the way, they're second league in 3-point attempts. Cause I remember like back in those years with the Spurs where Pop didn't like the high volume 3-point shooting. So the Spurs like several years in a row were like number one in the league in 3-point percentage, but like 30th in attempts.
Right.
So not only are the Celtics a little more than two for three, but not only the Celtics, the number one three-point shooting percentage, they're taking the second most number of attempts. So
yeah, that's why it's bonkers. They're shooting so great. They're taking more threes than everybody and making more than everybody. Like it's insane how good they've been.
Right. And we talked about this. We talked on them on the pod a few weeks ago. They're number one at the line in the league. They're the best free throw shooting team in the league. They're just the best shooting team. And they do it extremely efficiently. So, and they're sixth in assists because we know that last year we sometimes saw Tatum and Jaylen Brown get a little ISO heavy. And honestly, when they have unassisted baskets this year, a lot of times it's because they're in transition because they get a stop and they go full bore in transition and there's no assist because they get the fast break points.
Well, just so listen to these percent. No, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to read off the percentages. Malcolm Brogdon, 3.9 attempts per game, 49% from three. Al Horford, 4.5 attempts a game, 49% from three. Sam Hauser, 4.5 attempts a game, 48% from three. Derek White, 4 attempts a game, 45% from three. Grant Williams, just under 4 attempts from three, 44% from three. Like that is insane. For all of these guys to all be shooting that well, like,
and they are,
it's
and they
just
are
insane
arguably
stuff.
Missing their, you want to say their, you can't really say their third best player, but God, he's awfully good.
They're missing one of the best starting centers in the NBA.
You could argue they're missing their third best player. Like he,
I don't want to get on Marcus Smart's bad side this early in the season.
Listen, I mean, Al Horford.
Waterman Marcus Smart.
Robert Williams gives them a vertical. He gives them a vertical presence at the rim offensively they don't have otherwise. He's maybe the best shot blocker in the league. Like, whether he's their third best player or their fifth best player or whatever, like a critically important player to their team hasn't played a second and they're 18-4 and they're dominating the league. Like,
And look, the Brogdon trade has really helped because you talked about they tended to get a little sticky sometimes last season offensively. And Brogdon gives them, you know, coming off the bench, gives them more of a pure point guard type of feel, a guy who can create, who can shoot it, who can play on the ball, who can play off the ball. And that's one of those trades where it's working out great for both teams. The Celtics got a ready to be a major contributor on a contender. The Pacers, moved a guy who was just going to be kind of a progress stopper for maybe the best young backcourt in the league. You see what Halliburton's doing. You see what Mathurin's doing. Buddy Hield might be gone soon. They'll get the last pick in the draft, but that was more about moving Brogdon, moving the money and creating opportunity for young guys. And for the Celtics, you give up the last pick in the draft. Bunch of guys who
we don't know didn't for sure, but definitely a late pick.
The 29th or 30th pick. Sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, if it's not the last pick, it's going to be pretty close to it. Brogdon might be, and knock on wood that he stays healthy, which has obviously been an issue for him. He might be the piece that kind of pushes them over the top.
By the way, Danilo Gallinari, who they signed and now lost for the year with an ACL, he has shot over 40% on threes in four of the last five seasons. I'm doing the quick math here on like six threes attempts a game. He would have been another killer shooter that they
wanted. I'm gonna tell you though, we've talked about this before. I think it actually worked out better. I'm obviously not wishing it on him. Sam Hauser playing, I think, is a win for the Celtics. I think he's a better player right now than Danilo Gallinari is. I think he's better on defense. Obviously, he's not great on defense, but he can hold up, I think, better. And that guy is a lights out shooter. Like, you can see whenever he starts hitting a couple shots, the Celtics immediately start looking for him. He's come off the bench. He's a flamethrower coming in and making shots for them. I think that's been a low-key success for them this year to have. And again, another guy that signed for 3 years, I think at like $6 million, like is going to be a low-cost, high-value player for them going forward. Like their books are in good shape. They're in position to have a run here where they could be a pretty special team over these next couple of years.
Yeah. Okay, do we have trivia, Bontemps?
Ooh.
I don't have trivia.
Oh my God. You're terrible at your job, Bontemps. I'm embarrassed for you.
I'm actually relieved because I had trivia stripped away from me because I was fumbling the ball so much. And so
okay. I went straight to stats and info. Straight to stats and info. And I'll just go with the first thing that I see. I'm taking over trivia here.
College football's final rankings are announced this Sunday, along with the bowl announcements for the teams that did make the playoffs. And ESPN's College Game Day podcast with Reese Davis and Pete Thamel, along with Always College Football with Greg McElroy, have you covered. Follow and listen where you're listening to this podcast. It's time to knock that new business idea out of the park with Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Forget the off-season work. Shopify makes it simple to sell to anyone from anywhere. Whether you're selling warm-ups or wall hangers, it's time to start selling with Shopify and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. With Shopify, you'll customize your online store to your brand, discover new customers, and build the relationships that create those diehard fans. Shopify fields all the sales channels to grow a winning business. From an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks to 24/7 support and free on-demand business courses, Shopify is on your team every step of the way. It's how every minute new sellers around the world score their first sale with Shopify, and you can too. Shopify is the secret to becoming a business champion by making it simple for anyone to sell their products anywhere, taking the guesswork out of selling. When you're ready to take your winning idea to the world, team up with Shopify, the commerce platform powering millions of businesses down the street and around the globe. Try out Shopify for free today and start selling anywhere. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for a Hoop Collective trivia.
Kevin Durant is averaging. Kevin Durant, who the Celtics sniffed around on in the trade market. And, oh, was Jaylen Brown on the table? Anyways, Kevin Durant averaging 30.4 points on 55% shooting. Only three players in NBA history have averaged 30 points on 55% or better shooting in a season. They are...
Wilt Chamberlain.
No. Which, I question that. I'm just going with what they have here.
Let me ask you this real quick, as a quick aside. Would you trade Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant?
No.
Me either.
Okay, like, this is since 61-62. So this is the post-Wilt era. Post-Wilt era. I had to scroll up to get the 61-62.
Okay.
Shaq?
Real quick.
Shaq never averaged 30.
I'm sorry. Think about all the Durant's having an awesome year, as this trivia question is establishing. And he just had another awesome game. What do you have? 45?
Yep.
Okay.
39, but who's counting?
Okay, 35. Think about all the players who were rumored to be the centerpiece of Durant trades last summer. So, Scottie Barnes. Would you trade Scottie Barnes for Kevin Durant right now? I mean, the Raptors, I don't think would. But what about you? Would you trade him for him?
I still would think about that one.
I just think it potentially could make the Raptors a contender this year. I don't think it's an automatic yes or no. I think it's a discussion.
I don't think it's an automatic yes or no. I think it's a no for the Raptors.
All right, Brandon Ingram.
I would have done that one. I would have.
I would probably do that if I were them too.
And I like Ingram a lot, but I would have done that one.
I don't know if I would. I said last week to CJ, I don't think I would. And I
Tatum, I wouldn't.
Oh God, Tatum's untouchable.
I'm sorry. Not
I don't
Tatum.
Think I would.
Jaylen Brown. I'm sorry, Jaylen Brown. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't. By the way, I wouldn't trade Jason Tatum for anybody in the league. I wouldn't trade him for Luka.
I agree. He's arguably your MVP right now.
I might trade him for Giannis.
I was going to say, there's at least one player he should get traded for.
Let me take a step back.
But that trade ain't happening anyway.
All right, we got off track. Okay, the question is, McMahon, give it to us again.
Okay, 30 points shooting and 55%+ shooting since Wilt.
My two guesses would have been Shaq and Kareem. Okay,
you got Kareem.
I can't really think of anybody else who would have scored over 30.
They got to be big men because
these two, I'll give you a hint. They were both forwards. One is a postal office worker. One is a crosswalk dude.
Oh, Karl Malone's obviously one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Crosswalk dude.
I mean, I would call Karl Malone a big man. So
he was a power forward, bro.
What?
He was playing next to freaking Greg Ostertag and Mark Eaton.
He wasn't shooting three-pointers.
Yeah, we're agreeing with you.
The other guy.
That's a big guy.
The other guy is one of the best 6'6" and under post-up players in NBA history.
Oh, Adrian Dantley.
Adrian Dantley.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I didn't realize he scored. I mean, I knew he was a big scorer. I didn't realize he scored 30 in a season.
Dude, look at some of the numbers that Dantley put up. I without looking, I'm going to guess that that was with the Jazz. But some of the numbers Dantley put up earlier in his career are pretty ridiculous.
And yeah, a no super question. Underrated player.
And let me just tell you, me on 3.5 seconds of prep gives you better trivia than Bontemps with 3.5 days to get ready. So
he's not as good of a player out. He's not good as good of a player as Bob Pettit was.
Not Bob Pettit. Bob Pettit. Listen.
I just triggering
don't,
you.
Don't
just
have triggering don't you. Have don't get McMahon in trouble again. Just don't do it. Don't do it. Let him bask in the success of going to SIG.
That's the only thing I use Slack for.
SIG is what we call our stats and information group. SIG. I've argued that, you know, we need new revenue streams at ESPN to pay for the NBA deal that's coming. I think we should sell access to our SIG channels, especially.
You've also suggested selling access to our podcast group chat. That might result in.
No. I want to keep my job. So we talked earlier this week about the Pacers. I didn't give you guys a chance to talk about them. But because I was praising Tyrese Halliburton, I didn't want the heat from I would get by praising Tyrese Halliburton here.
No, he's on the Pacers, not the Heat.
I didn't want the heat because I've talked about the Sabonis trade so much with you guys. So I wanted to looking at Halliburton. We're an interesting moment here. Looking at these guys who are in their third years in the league, the guys who are going to have their contract decisions coming up in the offseason. Historically, obviously, there's lots of exceptions, but historically, guys in their third year is where they oftentimes take a leap, sort of establish themselves. And this is basically the guys from the 2020 draft, which I'll always remember. To a certain extent, because that was a draft where everybody was sitting in their living rooms at home with their families. It was a remote draft. And I actually thought it was really cool. And I remember Malika was in like this big giant green screened room in Bristol where she was like doing these interviews with them. I'm glad that the world's back to normal, but I enjoyed watching that draft a lot, seeing them with their families, getting those experiences of getting picked. So this is a draft where Anthony Edwards went number one to the Wolves. So I thought now that we're sort of into the third years of these guys, I thought we would take a look back at this draft. I don't want to do like a redraft. I know we do that sometimes, but I kind of wanted to take a look back and just see where these guys are. And this is a draft that's already shaping up to have been a pretty pivotal one for some of these teams. So Bontemps, the top five picks are fascinating.
Yes.
You're a big say the
top
Anthony
10 picks
Edwards.
Are fascinating.
Well, we'll start with the top five. you're a big Ant Edwards fan. He had a big game. The Wolves won without Karl Towns. First game without Towns Wednesday night. He had a big game. He obviously looks like he's going to be a stud player. There's no real regrets there, right, with the Wolves at one. But the big, big moment with the Warriors taking James Wiseman at two with LaMelo Ball on the board.
Forget LaMelo Ball. They didn't take Tyrese Halliburton. Tyrese Halliburton's best player in this draft. And
that's a hot opinion.
Well, look, Anthony Edwards is, I think, probably going to be a very good player, but you can't.
You're
look
backing
at the,
off. You no, were ready to declare Anthony Edwards the star of this draft two months ago.
Well, listen, I thought coming off last year, he had a chance to really ascend. And I think you have to look at the way this season has gone for Minnesota and have real questions about everybody involved. Like, this has been a disaster. I mean, McMahon has talked a bunch about how the way he showed up, and I'm not dooming him to failure by any means, but you look at the way he has approached this season, and to McMahon's point earlier about Malcolm Brogdon, to the way Tyrese Halliburton has approached this season, when he's been handed the keys to this franchise,
yeah,
and the way they both performed, it to me, it says a lot about where Tyrese is at. And you can go up and down through this draft and just look at where all these various teams would be if they had drafted him. And Golden State in particular, I mean, this James Wiseman swing and miss is one of the bigger mistakes in the history of the draft. When you look at the implications of what that means for that team, like,
well,
it's along the line.
Championship.
Yes,
they won the championship last year.
Yes, they did. Just like the Pistons won after they drafted Darko over Carmelo and Dwayne Wade and all those guys.
Yeah.
And you look at what could have.
There's a lot of similarities there for sure.
A lot of similarities there. And you look at what could have been. Like, imagine if you just put Tyrese Haliburton, forget any of these guys, but especially you put Tyrese Haliburton on the Warriors right now.
Well, and I will say this in defense of the Warriors, you know, obviously LaMelo is the one who they got a lot of criticism for not taking rookie of the year and,
yep,
you know, all that kind of stuff. Haliburton went 12. I mean,
oh, there's a lot of teams that missed. No, there's a lot of teams.
Well, could you imagine Haliburton? With all due respect, I don't say anybody, but I think very few people would have had Haliburton at one or two on their board. I know there were people that did.
There was talk at going up to the draft about whether the Warriors should look at Haliburton for that pick, because he was a guy who was going to walk in and be ready to play and could fit well in Golden State's offense. And from basically where Cleveland picked fifth on, every pick was, are these guys going to take Tyrese Haliburton for like nine picks?
Well, and I know at least one team, the Mavericks, were trying like hell to trade up for him. They were dangling Brunson, yep, 18 and 31.
Yeah, they talked to the everybody. Knicks about that.
Well, yeah, yep, they talked to the Knicks about it. And the Knicks like Toppin so much that and it's one of those things, both teams would be so much better off. The Mavericks with Haliburton, obviously having lost Brunson for nothing, the Knicks would have Brunson for half the price because they would have gotten him on the extension. But, you know, Haliburton, there's an argument for him being the best player in this draft. I think this summer there will be five guys who get max extensions in this draft or very close to, right? I think we're talking about Edwards, LaMelo, Haliburton, Bane, and then Maxey might be close. You know, I think he's going to get like Jordan Poole, Tyler Hero type of money. So pretty close to it. I think there's five max or near max extensions here.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, that's an interesting discussion point, but I want to focus on Wiseman right now.
Oof. You're just in a bad mood. Wiseman, who
I want to tell you exactly what his stats light are.
The G League. Okay, go ahead.
So he has played five games, according to the stats I'm looking at. He's averaging 26 minutes a game, which, you know, typically when, you know, one of the roster guys comes down, he gets very featured in the offense. They sort of tear the offense apart to do that. So he's averaging 15 points on 58% shooting. He's averaging just under 10 rebounds, two turnovers, and a 1.2 blocks. Okay. Good numbers, but not what you're looking for a guy like that to come down. The idea was to have him go down and destroy. And that's not really been happening. He's been okay.
No, he's been bad. He's also in five games, they're minus 35 with him on the floor. Net rating, he's a minus 9.3. He's an offensive, like, the guy can obviously finish, but he is an offensive clog. He's a just like, dude, their offensive rating 101.1. The freaking Warriors couldn't score with this guy on the floor. Like,
if you're a player,
he doesn't know how to play.
If you're a player of that caliber in theory, and you go down to the G League and you are not dominating, that's a real problem. You're not supposed to go down to the G League and be middling. Like, you're supposed to go down there and be the best player on the court. He has not been the best player on the court.
And as our guy Jackson said, I'm going to botch the pronunciation of his name. Help me with the Kings second round pick.
Name is Keita.
That guy put up 38 and 18 against Wiseman. Like, dude, he right now is a... Obviously, the guy is a physical specimen, tremendously athletic. You know, like he looks like an NBA big man, moves like an NBA big man. He doesn't know what he's doing. Like he is a total project, and he needs to spend probably the full season in the G League, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, just to compare, Nemus Keto is he's a second year player. Was he a second round pick, Bontemps?
Yeah, Weissman's a third year player.
Right, I know. I'm just comparing because it's interesting because he plays for Stockton. He's averaging 20 points a game in the G League. He's shooting 73% from the field, averaging 2.5 blocks a game, a steal a game. Like that's a guy who
he's dominating.
Yes. That's
what James Wiseman was supposed to go down there and do, was dominate and get some confidence.
I used to call it the J.J. Barea D-League test because Barea, early in his career, went down to the old Fort Worth Flyers. He played in two games. He scored 40 and 35. It's like, okay, this guy's there's an NBA player there. When NBA players go down to the G League, if they don't dominate, there is reason for concern.
It's almost like I just said that.
No stretch of the imagination is he dominating. I'm reiterating. Well,
okay, so I know. I'm just giving you a hard time. Look,
plus, this is my opinion. Seriously.
I've said this in the past. His skill set is extremely impressive. And I can see, like, you know, you compare him to kind of Darko a minute ago, Bontemps. You remember the famous workout that Darko had with in front of the Pistons? The Pistons were in New York.
Yes.
During the Eastern Conference Finals, when they were playing the New Jersey Nets 2003, and they had the shoot around, and it was sort of arranged that Darko was there, and like Joe Dumars came over and watched. And why am I having a brain fart? The guy who was with the Celtics, oh God, the Mavericks for 100 years, the European scout,
Tony Ronzoni,
he's there. And Darko has this workout, you know, one-on-zero workout where he looks absolutely out of his mind. The Pistons are falling all over themselves. And that night win the lottery. And they're like, well, we're taking this Darko guy or not win. They finished second. But it was all, you know, it was, you know, like a win for them because had Memphis won the lottery, they wouldn't have got the number one pick. So the best thing they could have ever dreamed of was getting the number two pick. Their tip pick was top one protected. So they're like, oh my God, we're going to take Darko. Wiseman had this workout in front of the Golden State crew, but he didn't have any game film because he'd never played at Memphis basically. And he has this workout. I think it was in Miami and they already liked him. And I think Lacob was there and Lacob loved what he saw. And like, they fell in love with him at this workout. And like Minnesota was trying to get them to move around the draft. Like Minnesota was being cagey and trying to get, the Golden State to trade back up into the number one spot, and they were like, no, we love Wiseman. We're going to take him second, and it's the same type of situation that's playing out. And I can see because his physical skills are breathtaking, but he's not executing. I don't know what to say. It's a wild end, and he's got injury issues.
I mean, what to say is he's been a disastrous draft pick, and they have a choice to make in the next 2 months, which is, are they going to turn him into a player that can help them win a championship this year, or are they going to continue to put good money after bad and keep him on their roster and have him be a black hole in the roster that is not going to help them at all this year? That's the choice they have.
Well, but you say it's the choice they have. You assume that they can turn him into a player. It's other NBA teams. Trust me, they actually watch these G League games. They're aware of all the issues here.
I'm not talking about turning him into a star.
Kelly Olynyk is the one that who you brought up, who I thought was an interesting, pure hypothetical, to be clear, but an interesting. Yes. Like, hey, would that be worth it on the Jazz end to take a flyer? Certainly it would make sense for the Warriors, but do they want to sell low on a
short? If you're Kelly Olynyk would be really good on the Warriors.
I'd be incredible. Absent. He'd be incredible. But look, that's what I'm talking about. Do you take James Wiseman, go to these bad teams, go to San Antonio, go to Utah. I mean, Utah's obviously played well, but a team that's not interested in like trying to contend right now. Do you go to those teams and say, look, here's a free flyer on James Wiseman. Play him. See if he turns into something. Give us a player or two for our bench. Good, solid depth players to help us with our bench now. And we'll give you a guy with, I mean, we all agree he's got a ton of physical tools. He could potentially turn into a player. What we also all agree on is he ain't going to turn into a player in the next 2 months.
Yeah.
And so like, to me, if I'm Golden State, I have to trade this guy. I just have to, because they keep him on the roster the rest of the year. He ain't going to help him at all. And this team is not good enough to beat. Like, we just spent the first half of the pod talking about the Celtics. I saw the Bucks last night. Those two teams are far and away the best teams in the league. And if Golden State wants to compete with those teams, they have to improve their bench. They can't go into the playoffs with this bench and this team and think they're going to beat Boston again. Or if they play Milwaukee, they're going to beat them. They're not going to have a shot. So that's the choice they got to make. It's like, they're going to try to be light years ahead, or are they going to try to win right now? Like, because if they try to be light years ahead, I just do not see them doing it. I think when you got Steph playing like this, you have to go for it now. Mm-hmm. You can't be screwing around thinking he's going to be good 3 years from now.
You know, else is interesting about the Warriors. Anthony Lamb has become a rotation player for them
on a two-way,
and they're going to have to probably deal with that at some point. Mm-hmm. And when you're as deep into the luxury tax and repeater tax as they are, like, you can't just,
dump a player.
You can't just say it's no big deal. We'll just move. Like, they're going to have to start thinking about roster management, too.
Yeah.
So, okay. So LaMelo Ball went third. This season has been a total wreck. LaMelo has sprained his ankle badly twice. I don't think we have much doubts about him. It was a great pick by the Hornets. We'll see where his career goes, because the Hornets are not in a good position. And I think they really, really need to get lucky in this draft and get picks one or two.
Yeah.
Because I don't like the direction that they're heading.
I mean, I think the question about LaMelo is, can he be the best player on a good team? And we haven't had a chance to find out yet.
He's super talented, and he's a way better shooter than I and other people thought he was going to be. And I don't think there's much to say there. Okay, Bulls drafted Patrick Williams fourth. This has been rough. He basically missed almost 80% of his second year because of injury. This year he's come in. He was a starter as a rookie, but their team wasn't very good. They invested a lot in him in being a starter this year, and he has just been a very average player. He's he's averaging 9 points. He's shooting 45% from the field. And there are plenty of times where he does not play the key minutes down the stretch of the game. He's only averaging 25 minutes a game, which is low for a starter. Billy Donovan at times just hasn't shown a whole lot of trust in him. And look, when Arturis Kanishevis drafted him, at four, he picked over some guys because he thought that this guy could have been the kind of two-way wing with size, combo forward with size, that could be like a difference-making player. Same sort of physical makeup as a Kawhi Leonard. That's what they were attracted to. And Bontemps, it has not happened.
And he's contributed more than Kawhi has this year. What are you talking about?
That's true. Yeah, it's true. Kawhi last night missed his 108th out of his last 113 Clipper games. Patrick Williams has been a disappointment in Chicago. There's no other way to put it. He's a fine player, but he's not special. And they thought they had a special player here.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I'd say he's a fine player at this point. He's been a below average player, really, to this point in his career when he's been on the court. So, I mean, yeah, it's not much of a debate, really. I mean, he hasn't been what they needed him to be, and really hasn't been close to it. And you look at where their roster was at, was the one swing piece they had to really take a leap forward with the group they put together. And it does not look like it's panning out that way.
Now, Halliburton was a guy that could have gone here. I'm not so sure that Halliburton was ever going one or two, but Halliburton could have gone here.
Yeah. From here to where he got picked, was in play at every pick. It wasn't, this isn't one of those things where, like, people, it's not like Desmond Bane, who was, right. you know, somewhere in the back half of the first round. It's like, oh, why didn't he get taken fifth? Like,
yeah, or he wasn't even Maxey.
Right. Those guys were not looked at as lottery picks. Tyrese Haliburton, literally every pick in that draft was when is this guy going to go from four at minimum five to Cleveland until 12. And it was that would they kept showing him on TV. Is this going to be the pick he goes? No. All right. What about this one? What about this one? What about this one? And he would have looked good in all those places.
And of course, the team that did draft him ended up trading him, which we'll get to that. So Isaac Okoro goes fifth. It's been a rough season for Isaac Okoro in Cleveland. They are so badly need some production from the wing on that roster.
It's the one hole on that roster.
Yeah. And he's having a terrible year. He's having a terrible year.
It's hard to watch. Like, I actually was in Cleveland last week, as you know, and he got a wide open look in the corner and just like, I think dented the rim. And then whether it was the next possession, a couple possessions later, he wide open the corner, he fumbles it out of bounds. And you could just see, it was like, if he was thinking, oh God, when I catch the thing, I have to shoot it. And I mean, it's painful to watch him offensively.
He's shooting 20% from 3-point range as a wing.
And here's the thing. He shot 35% on threes last year. And his confidence has steadily eroded during his career offensively. And so he's shooting worse. He's being more hesitant. And what's happening is teams are just not even guarding him.
Right.
He's basically Andre Roberson at this point.
Yeah, but
even if he makes one, nobody cares if he makes it because they don't expect him to make another one.
I agree, but Roberson was a more impactful defender because, at least on the Cavs, what the Cavs really need is if you're not going to get it done offensively, defensively they need somebody to be physical on the perimeter, and he's just not big enough. He's 6'5", and he would be like anybody who's 6'5" in the NBA, you wish he was 6'8". Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. So against Toronto the other night, Cleveland played against Toronto, and Nick Nurse, who's known for having inventive defensive schemes, basically was playing almost like a playoff defense on the Cavs and put Okoro's man in the way of Donovan Mitchell.
And what did Donovan do in the game? Drive. He shot 3 for 11 and was a non-factor.
He had 8 points. Now it was the third game in 4 nights. Could have contributed to it, but all right.
But
so
it's
anyway,
just the point it doesn't matter that he's on the court. That's a disastrous pick. It was a disastrous thing for them to pick up his option for next year, frankly.
I don't know about that. You've said that to me privately. He didn't have the worst year last year, but this year he's been awful. He's been awful. I don't know what to say. And they've had to start him and play him a little bit. The other day when they played against Toronto because of other injuries that they had, he started off the game defending. Well, Scotty Barnes didn't start, but Scotty Barnes came in the game. Or no, he started off the game defending Pascal Siakam. Mm-hmm. He's a decent defender, but he can't defend Pascal Siakam.
We just set an NBA podcast record for time spent on Isaac
Okoro.
We talked about Isaac Okoro.
Number six, Okenye Okwongwu. Number six, Onyeka Okongwu.
I mean, this is the worst pronunciation of his name of all time.
Onyeka Okongwu. Sorry.
Big O.
Big O. Let's say that. Yeah, good player. Going to be a good player. Would rather have Tyrese Haliburton. We can move on.
I think that's fair. And, you know, when you have Capella on the roster, obviously his role is going to be limited.
Good. He's a good player. He's good. He's not Tyrese Haliburton. We can move on. We can make that a nice and short and sweet discussion.
There you go.
We can get to the real disasters coming up here.
All right. Killian Hayes went seventh to the Pistons.
Woof. Absolute disaster.
Woof. Woof.
Might not be a backup. Terrible player. Same position.
Bontemps, you're just so harsh, man.
I mean, this is just the truth. He's been terrible. The next two drafts, they drafted two guards that are playing way over him and are way better than him. You know, it's like,
man, the man's not lying. The man is not lying.
All right. Knicks went with Obi Toppin and were over the moon that he was still there doing backflips. They were so excited to draft Obi Toppin.
Yeah. And he's been a nice rotation player the last couple of years. But I mean, if you're doing backflips in the lottery, I would hope the guy's starting by his third season.
He's a backup power forward who's an offense first power forward, might be the least value position now in the league.
He's an offense only power forward.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot of consternation in New York about the Knicks kind of being on a treadmill and being stuck in the middle right now. And they're not really sure what they're going to do, especially after they did trade for Donovan Mitchell, even though I think we all agree at the time, I would still say it wasn't worth trading every pick they have to get Donovan Mitchell. This is the move, I think, if you want to kill the Knicks under the Leon Rose administration, this is the move you kill him for. You had Obi Toppin and Tyrese Haliburton sitting there. You want to use the CAA thing, both CAA guys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they take Obi Toppin. They don't take Tyrese Haliburton. You put Tyrese Haliburton on this Knicks team, things look a lot different. And
you wouldn't have to spend $100 million on Jalen Brunson. You could have used that $100 million elsewhere.
Or you could have him and Jalen Brunson. You could play them together. I mean, that would be a nice, that'd be a really nice pairing. And instead, you know, they've got Obi Toppin, who's fine, but is a rotation, you know, probably second, you know, probably an off the bench scoring big. Like, it's just, there's just not a lot of value in that. And the other guy's going to probably be an all-star. Like, that's a real inflection.
Who, Haliburton? Dude, he's an all-star. There's no probably.
Well, I just haven't gone through and listed out the players, but he's
leading the league in assists. He's had a 3-game stretch with 40 assists and no turnovers.
I agree. I think he's a stud. I'm not arguing that. Obviously, my point is simply that if you want to come after the Knicks about what they've done over this run, this is, to me, the one you can really zero in on and say they completely misevaluated this pick. And that really is going to hurt them long term.
Well, the thing about it is you keep saying it's all these teams who just passed on Haliburton. A number of these players are not working out. Like, you know, if any of these teams had picked Haliburton, it'd be better. But it's not like there were other players that were complete misses. So.
Yeah, because they all missed on the one good player who was in this stretch.
There's another pretty good player in the stretch.
Well, we're getting to him.
Wizards took Denny Avdija, who I actually talked about earlier this week on the last pod about how he's developed into a pretty decent defensive player, but not the type of lottery pick you're hoping for.
No, he's been fine. I mean, he's a combo forward who can do some stuff. He's fine. But again, it's a lesser version of the Okongwu situation, right? He's a fine player. He'll be a fine rotation player, but it's just not what you, it's not, he's, he doesn't pales in comparison to the other guy.
Doesn't put the ball in the basket a whole lot.
Right.
Yeah. So the Suns took Jalen Smith, who we also talked about earlier this week on the pod, didn't pick up his third year option and traded him.
This was the other real disaster too.
Well, the Suns have taken, if the Suns take Haliburton here, it's
unfair. It's unfair.
They might have won. You could make a pretty good argument if they just draft Tyrese Haliburton, they win the title 2 years ago because he would have been playing over Cameron Payne in the finals against the Bucks, and they were close to winning that series. They have a little bit better guard play in that series. They very well win it. Like, it was that close. You know, and you talk about a succession plan for Chris Paul, Tyrese Haliburton and Devin Booker for the next 10 years look pretty damn good. Holy.
Okay, so Spurs took Devin Vassell with the 11th pick.
Nice player. Has a chance to be good. You know,
he's having a good year this year.
I think he could be really good.
Yeah.
This is the one pick in all these picks that if you're going back and looking at it, I think you can make – this is the one pick where I think you could say this – it was all right for them to not take Haliburton because Vassell is really improving. He's a wing player who can play at both ends. Like, he's got a potential to be a really good player.
Yeah, the Spurs have two guys on their roster right now who you can see being starters on a good team. He's one, Keldon Johnson's the other. I'm talking about a good team when they are ready to be good.
Yeah, for sure. Years. Absolutely.
Yeah, so the way they've dumped some players on their roster with, dumping some of their guards, they cleared out space for him to play. He's playing 33 minutes. He's starting. I think he's out with injury right now. I think he's maybe he's back. Anyway, he's averaging 21 points a game and shooting 42% on threes. They loved him from the start. They were happy to have him.
Do you mean to tell me you didn't lock into Spurs Thunder with Shea sitting out last night? That wasn't the top game in your rotation?
I'm not allowed to watch.
Oh, that's right. You're in the NBA Bermuda Triangle.
The Golden City on the Hill is blacked out from 97% of the NBA.
if Chet Holmgren was playing, I would have used the streams that are not illegal streams, but there's something available to reporters where you can watch. I would have tapped into that. But right now, I just want to have Righteous Indignation. I'll stick with that for this season. But no, I wouldn't have watched even if I had access to it. Also, when I'm on the road, I have no problem. I can watch when I'm on the road. Okay, so 12. Who'd the Kings take? I can't remember.
took a certain guy, Tyrese Haliburton, who's no longer on their team anymore.
Right. Well, the thing about the Tyrese Haliburton trade decision, and I have obviously talked in this pod about how I value Domantas Sabonis.
But no, you're my a beam lighter.
The reason I value Sabonis is the thing about the trade is Buddy Hield was in the trade. I'm not taking a position on the actual trade. The Pacers won the trade. My position was people were crapping on Sabonis as if he was
about crapping on Sabonis. It was about, dude, you have,
yeah,
like,
it was.
Haliburton's
there were a lot of people crapping.
Okay.
I know.
It was more about you're a year and a half into a home run of a draft pick. Like, how you got to get a guy who I think is going to be a several time all-star late in the lottery. Dude, you're less than halfway through his rookie deal and you give him up. God, come on, man.
Here's the problem with this trade beyond what we've talked about in the past. The Kings picked De'Aaron Fox and Davion Mitchell over Haliburton. And Davion Mitchell, who got a guy who there were people who thought was a young Mark, he could still be, but people saw him as like a young Marcus Smart. That's the type of player that they thought they had here. And he, in his sophomore season, he's had a major regression. He is not starting. Mike Brown has slashed his minutes, his offensive output, although he was not a high efficient player last year, his offensive output has cratered along with it.
Here, I think, is the real issue with the trade. Obviously, McMahon is right about the contract difference between the players, regardless of Sabonis' age. The real issue to me is, goes back to what I said about Obi Toppin before. I think you can make, if you look at where the NBA is today, an offense first power forward is probably the least valuable position in the league in terms of trying to build a team that's going to be a contending team, because you have to have so many pieces fit around that guy to be a successful high level team. And the Kings turned a really good young lead guard into an offense first power forward who's already on his second contract. Domantas Sabonis is a very good player. He's a very talented player. But if you're trying to construct a team that's going to contend in today's NBA, that archetype of player is just not a guy that's on those teams now. You look at the really good teams, that player doesn't exist on them. That's why, you know, there's a reason that John Collins has been in trade discussions for 3 years and Julius Randle has been in discussions for 3 years. It's not that those guys are bad players. It's that they're awkward fits with the way the league is now. And yeah.
Those kind of players on good teams are probably six men.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you throw Buddy Hield in the trade now we're talking about, you know, there's been all this talk for weeks and months, right? Are the Lakers going to give up two first round picks for Miles Turner and Buddy Hield? So you add that value. And on top of it, that's why the trade really, to me, was such a disaster from the Kings standpoint. It's not that Domantas Sabonis is a bad player. It's just, to me, it's misevaluating where the league is going and what value is.
Yeah, the Lakers can really use a good big, like maybe the guy who put up 31 and 29 on Miles Turner the other night.
Oh, wait, they have him.
All right, well, so is really the message here that the believing in Wiseman without having enough, five-on-five data was a mistake, and then everybody else passing on Halliburton was a mistake. Is that pretty much the takeaway?
Pretty much, and we give the Spurs a pass because they did at least find a good player to love it.
Well, and I also do think it's worth pointing out, like, the draft is very hard, right? Like,
oh my God, I'm not saying I could do better.
No, but I mean it. Like, especially after dumping on all these teams, like. If everybody knew how the draft was going to play out, like obviously things would look way different every year, right? Like it's far from an exact science on any front, but you look in particular at this draft and with how many of these players in the top 10 in particular are not even starting level players,
mm-hmm.
that's what makes it so painful. Like if there was this was a top 10 where you had, you know, like last year, right? Like there's a whole bunch of guys you could look at it and say, oh, this guy's really good. This guy's really good. This guy's really good. Like, hey, all right. Like we at least got a starter out of it. Like Devin Vassell's a good example. He's going to be a good to very good wing player in the NBA at both ends. That's a really valuable player. If there were three or four of those guys interspersed through the top 10, like, all right, then you could look at it and say, all right, maybe you didn't get Tyrese Haliburton, but you got this guy. Instead, you're looking at a bunch of guys that are bench players or worse. And then this guy's turned into an all-star when everybody was debating whether we were going to draft him. That's where it looks really bad.
Real quick, let's look at the back half of this draft because this is one of the reasons.
Interspersed is a good word, by the way.
I try, bud.
The back half of this draft is almost the exact opposite.
There's players.
So the Thunder traded up to get Poku, Oleksiy Pokuševski, who is like kind of.
He can get that pronunciation right.
I'm a big Thunder viewer of all the games I'm not allowed to watch. Sadiq Bey went 19 in a draft night trade. He ended up with the Pistons.
You just skipped over Josh Green, who actually is.
I was going to say, Josh Green's a player.
Having a very encouraging third year for the Mavericks.
Sure
and,
is.
And
he's
they've
good.
Gotten killed on that pick because he's not Tyrese Maxey and he's not Desmond Bane. And because it was the Donnie Nelson didn't get to make the pick, he would have picked Bey.
Skipping it because I didn't want to get into the whole unknown.
But he's a good player.
He is a good player.
He's finally, you know, yeah. Okay. So Josh Green also in a desirable position. Same with Sadiq Bey. The Heat draft Precious Achiuwa at 20, who has proven to be a quality big.
Sure.
And was
solid player.
Was part of the package that got them Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
And then Tyrese Maxey, who I don't remember if you listed the five players you think you're going to get Max's.
No, Tim included them in them. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I put him in the Jordan Poole, Tyler Hero. If he doesn't get Max, it'll be that range. It'll be near.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a different conversation.
but a hell of a pick at 21, to say the least.
Oh, yes, a great pick. And then they you know, a year in were cautious, you know, didn't want to give him up for Kyle Lowry in that possible trade. And that, you know, has been affirmed, although we'll never know what would happen.
Wouldn't give him up in the James Harden deal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. To their credit.
So you have some other guys who are picked in here. Emmanuel Quickley had a really good rookie year.
He's another good player. Phoenix.
Yes. has been a little bit stuck in a logjam, but I think has a good future. But taking 25th, that kind of production, 25th, really good. 28th pick is Jaden McDaniels.
Great pick by the Lakers.
he was picked by the Lakers, but he was already a Wolf on the Thunder. Actually, I think had the pick and then
there were like 100 different trades there. Ricky Rubio was involved in trades there.
I did investigate it. Even though the Lakers drafted him, it was the Wolves who made the call to make the pick at 28th. It wasn't like the Lakers picked him and then later tried to trade him or the Thunder. But he's obviously, 6'10", combo forward, highly desirable. And then, of course, Desmond Bane at 30, who is going to get paid.
Peyton Pritchard's a rotation player, too, for Boston.
We're long in the pod here. I'm sort of trying to speed it up. But, yeah, Peyton Pritchard's a rotation player and a guy who's in the final. A team was in the finals. Look, some of these guys at the front here, they would kill for Peyton Pritchard, so a very interesting draft, getting more interesting by the day, and definitely another reminder. We've had many reminders over the years about the uncertainty of drafting in the league. And here we have it again. So
keep an eye on those Santa Cruz Warriors. Can you get them in Omaha?
Sure. Why not? We can stop through. We have terrific facilities here. So, all right. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to our producers. Thank you to McMahon. And thanks to all the listeners. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.